Welcome into the Boardroom, Weagle's premier all-sports talk show. If you care about the sport, we talk about it. From Auburn football to the English Premier League, we discuss it all. Now sit back and relax, because the Boardroom is now in session.
And welcome into the Boardroom, everybody. You're hanging out with Griggs, Connor, and Nelson. We are once again without Kyle, which seems like it's the 19th time we've been doing the show without Kyle.
Shots fired from Griggs Wangenberg. I believe it's only three. We should clarify, he's going to see his in-laws and their
triplets
and future parents as well. So
that is true.
Kyle, we wish
future
you,
parents.
Or Kyle, at least from this side of the studio, Nelson and I wish you and Emily safe travels. No hate. I hope you all have a wonderful Easter weekend.
Sorry, Kyle, we will miss you. But yes, I can't deal with Connor giving out the picks again. But yes, you're once again back for the Boardroom. Happy to have y'all on, and let's just go ahead and rip the band-aid right off. Auburn basketball, first round exit in the NCAA tournament to the Yale Bulldogs last Friday in Spokane, Washington. The Tigers fell to the Bulldogs after a Chad Baker-Mazzara double flagrant minutes into the game. Flagrant 2 minutes into the game, which caused the Tigers to – that was not one of the reasons.
Yeah, careful. You could take any player off that Auburn team, including Janai Broome, and they should still beat you.
Yeah, that game was – I mean, it stinks. It stings a lot. But, like, that game was so weird. If you run a simulation 99 times or 100 times, 99 of those, Auburn wins. And, like, the one simulation that Yale wins, I think, is what happened Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did you have Chad getting ejected 3 minutes into the game, we were up 10-2. You had the Greek guy, I forgot how you say his name.
Thanasis.
No. He could probably beat him in a 1v1, to be fair.
The Greek god of making step-back NBA threes.
Step-back NBA threes over our 6'11", 6'10 centers, you can't – it's March.
It was destined.
We got Jack Golkied by the Greek god.
Listen, this has been the college basketball season
March.
Of the scrawny, annoying white guy.
It's March.
Dalton Connect has led the charge. Jack Golkey's been there. Yale had about 8 of them.
Oh, yeah.
And this has just been the MO. And, I mean, even with that guy going nuclear, even with Chad going out, Auburn was in a position to coast to the finish line with 7 minutes left, up 10. And they made so many plays that were not winning basketball.
Turnovers,
missed free throws.
Turnovers,
Trey Donaldson turnovers. With a couple costly turnovers at the end. Just a team that didn't show any poise, which I think you can kind of look back and we talked about maybe that Mississippi State game in the SEC tournament was, hey, this is good experience for them finally playing a close game. They had no experience playing close games down the stretch, and it showed. No poise.
Well,
missing free throws, the shots, the scramble at the end of the game. If Jalen Williams catches the ball off the rebound and pump fakes up and lays it in, we're going to overtime.
Or there's a wide open Denver Jones on the right wing that could have easily had that shot.
Here's a crazy idea. How about Jalen Williams getting that rebound with 4 seconds left and calling a timeout? Let's reset.
Speaking of,
let's get Katie Johnson out of the game and our shooters into the game.
Speaking of timeouts, I think there was like 4 straight possessions with a turnover. Like late, and we're still like up 6 at that time. We're still with like 3 minutes to go, still in control of the game for the most part. And I think we've made this comment maybe 5 times this season. And look, he rebuilt this program. He had this team buzzing going into the tournament. But the grind never stops, and Bruce not calling a timeout is something that we've said for a while will lose us games. And right there, it's the perfect time after those turnovers to reel it in, get a game plan going, because that offense the last 5 minutes looked abysmal, and there was really no coaching going on. There was no direction. There was no emphasis, attention to detail. It was sloppy. It was lazy. And it cost us to win against a team that played, I mean, give it to Yale, they played very well. They were able to get a first-round win. Now, they came back on Sunday and played absolutely terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it was so predictable that they were going to regress shooting. I think the Greek guy had, like, 9 points.
Yeah, he had 29 in the first game, 9 in the second game.
But to kind of go off your point, and this is the criticism of Bruce as a coach, is Bruce is an excellent recruiter. One of the best in college basketball, and he touched today on, like, they're not going to tamper with rosters because he doesn't need to. And pregame, coming into the game with, like, sideline out-of-bounds plays, baseline out-of-bounds plays, some of the preset script, he's amazing. But once the whistle blows and 40 minutes starts, He gets out-coached with in-game adjustments. Nate Oates has rinsed him a couple times, and James Jones rinsed him. And you saw that they came into that game plan with a game plan for Chad Baker-Mazzara, which you should have. And what Chad Baker-Mazzara did is unacceptable, and it shouldn't have happened. But as a coaching staff, you have to adjust. You have to make in-game adjustments. And we started to see it with a little bit with Denver at the three, and then we went back. And then we had KD Johnson at the end of the game, who we'll touch on him in a second. He's not, even with Chad Baker-Mazzara out, he's not the guy that should be taking shots at the end of the game. He's just not. No. I love KD. I'm super grateful for what he's done for the program for 3 years. But there's a reason he's a player whose minutes have gone down every year he's been here.
And that shot was nowhere near. It was way off. And he double clutched, and it was an open.
It's a difficult shot, whatever. But I'd much rather have even Aiden Holloway or Denver Jones or Chaney Johnson taking that shot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather give Denver that because Denver was one
of
our.
No, it's a scramble. But bright, my point is that.
He was open right next to him.
The five on the floor, KD should not be in the game. It's coming off a free throw. Call the timeout, make the sub. He gets caught up in some of the extracurriculars of the games. Nelson's point, this is not the game where you just let them keep turning the ball over on offense and, like, go figure it out. Call a timeout. You do not get to take the timeout on the plane back to Auburn. But he did. He tried.
He's got
to,
I mean, eventually.
At some point, I mean, at 65, adjust or don't adjust.
I mean, you see it when we're at a couple of the games, or a lot of the games actually this year. But, I mean, some of those games, I think LSU in particular, where they went on like a 20-0 run to cut it from like a 30-point lead to a 10-point lead with like 5 minutes left. Like, we saw Steven multiple times running over to him, telling him to call a timeout, and Bruce shooing him away. Yeah, that's your own flesh and blood to do that to. And I
think the next time this Auburn program sees the Final Four is with Steven Pearl.
At this rate.
Listen, I love him. What he's done with Auburn basketball is not just in the SEC, is one of the best building of a program in college basketball in the 21st century. Auburn was nothing as a basketball school since pretty much Charles Barkley, but these older coaches, the in-game stuff is starting to pass them by. And look at the dominant coaches right now in college basketball. It's not John Calipari. It's not Bruce Pearl. Look at what just happened to Bill Self. He scraped by Samford and got absolutely waxed by Mark Few. Tom Izzo hasn't made the Sweet 16 since Cassius Winston in 2019. The guys that are dominating, Dan Hurley. Look what Shaheen Holloway's done with Seton Hall. Like these new younger guys, T.J. Otzelberger at Iowa State,
Nate Oates.
Like even Lamont Paris. Look what he did.
I mean, everyone
on the
Sweet 16 right now.
Like
these are all younger guys.
Pretty much for the most part. Like Mark Few's been there a while. Rick Barnes is an older guy, but those are also two coaches that are probably going to choke. Painter's closer to the age of some of these younger guys than older guys. This is. Kind of a critical point in college basketball where, you know, Jay Wright has exited, Mike Krzyzewski's exited, Roy Williams has exited, and these kind of older style coaches that are left over, they're struggling, especially in the NCAA tournament.
Think Bruce has kind of handled the NIL a lot better than those other guys would.
Well, that's
because
the benefit of being at Auburn.
That's true, but when you're talking
when you're talking
about
NIL,
like Roy Williams,
players to begin with.
When you're talking about Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski and like Bill Self, all these older guys, like when they have the NIL thing doesn't really matter for them as much because they have the brand built up. Auburn is on the rise in that, but Bruce has been able to handle that a lot better. I think he's come out and said that it's a hard thing. He put off building a new practice facility so we could focus more on NIL. I think he's handled that really well. Now, you are right. The in-game adjustments are lacking a little bit, but still, I think that goes back to our thing of like Auburn was not really in many close games this year. That kind of was their own kind of little bit of downfall because all you had to go off of were
it was Tennessee
practice,
for a second
negotiations and then like close.
Well, it's
like
not
losses.
Hold on. It's not that we weren't in close games. We didn't win any. Tennessee on the road was a close game.
Mississippi State was just a terrible game all around.
Mississippi State was the only one. But I'm talking regular season.
Yeah.
The seven losses or whatever in the regular season, I believe App State. I know Tennessee on the road. I think Mississippi State on the road. Those were all Alabama on the road was. Those were all single digit games. And again, this team never kind of got to the point where down in crunch time, because Mississippi State, we pulled away before crunch time. Like, last 2 minutes, they didn't prove that they could do that. And I think if you can kind of pinpoint maybe one thing, and maybe what I would suggest going into the portal to address is, we had young guards.
Yeah.
And having young guards at the end of the game leads to chaos, leads to turnovers, leads to the ball getting stuck at the top of the key with dribbling around for 20 seconds. And I found myself on last Friday going a couple times, really wish we had Zepp Jasper right now. I really wish we had Zepp Jasper to just kind of get the offense flowing, calm everything down. And Trey has that in him, but he hadn't really done it before because Aiden Holloway had played a lot of the end game minutes. And I certainly think it seems like it's trending that Aiden Holloway is not going to be on this roster next year. And I hope that spot goes to a grad transfer or senior point guard who can come in with his poise, with some experience. And we don't need to score 20 points a game out of that spot, but eight assists a game with maybe one or two turnovers, get a high ATO guy would be huge.
We'll kind of touch on the next year's roster probably in the next segment, but I mean, that's kind of what you had this year at some points. You had the one guard having, you know, not turning the ball over a lot. I mean, I think Aiden led the country for freshmen in his turnover ratio. He just couldn't transition. He was fine. He just couldn't play make enough. He couldn't dribble drive, kick out to the wing. He couldn't, he couldn't make threes to save his life. And that was his calling card in high school. Just the late game situation in Yale, for 38 minutes, the Bruce style works, and it proved to work very well this year in a lot of those games. And it's not every game, but it always seems like the big ones that happens, he lets the game kind of outpace him. And those last 2 minutes, he's not a big micromanager when it comes to in-game stuff. And he kind of has to turn on that switch. But like you said, at age 65, I don't think it'll ever happen.
It's okay. Like, he's done this to himself a little bit. The expectations now are really high. Like, we've won a couple SEC championships. They made a Final Four run. But, like, most programs don't win every year.
Oh, yeah.
Most programs get stuck in March. It took Jay Wright. Jay Wright had one Final Four run in 2009 and didn't get back until they won the national championship in 2016. Like, winning games in March is really, really hard to do.
I mean,
and Auburn in the last five tournaments still has a lot of wins. Now, most of that's inflated, but they did win a game with Jabari Smith. They won a game last year somehow against Iowa and had Houston on the ropes in Birmingham. Like, it's not like they've gone out and thrown up absolute duds. I think that Miami game in 2022.
That Miami
22,
team was good.
The Miami team made the Final Four.
Not that year.
Next year.
The core of that Miami team.
I mean, it's the same team.
And Jim Larrañaga is a great coach. Like, it's going to sound super critical of Bruce, and it is to an extent, but part of this is, the cost of success is not just him, and with the SEC outside of Kentucky is performing at a much higher level than they were when Bruce took over. And the expectations are different, especially when you're going to cough up a bunch of on-victory money. But we'll talk about what we're going to do with some of that on-victory money next segment.
And, yes, we're going to go to our break. When we come back, we got more talking about Auburn basketball and more about the next round of the Sweet 16 of the March Madness NCAA tournament. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Boardroom on Weagle 91.1 FM. And welcome back into The Boardroom, everybody. Hanging out with Griggs, Connor, and Nelson. Last time we talked about Auburn basketball's loss to Yale, kind of the steps back from that. And now we're going to continue that conversation now. And the main thing we're talking about is what do we need to bring in?
Yeah, so as most people already know, our resident psycho, K.A. Johnson.
Well, one of our resident
one
psychos.
Honestly, at the end of the day, you kind of only need one resident psycho, and I think that kind of costs us against Yale. But our longest tenured resident psycho, K.A. Johnson, has entered the transfer portal with his COVID year remaining. K.A.'s done well for us these 3 years. That UConn game, I mean, we'll go down in history. We ended up losing that game, but he was the sole reason why we were in that game. Did well in the Jabari year. Came back last year with a spark off the bench. This year, each year, like Connor said earlier, each year his volume and his minutes decreased because we kind of got better guards around him that were able to kind of control the game better. But all in all, a good career for KD. Wish him the best in his future endeavors, unless it's a team we play every year, in which case we hope we beat him. But looking forward, right now, we have some decisions to make. Currently on the roster, I think the main one of concern is Jani Broome. What will we give him an NIL to keep him back? He's kind of mocked late second round, which those guys are mostly two-way players. Paying around half a million dollars, $500,000. So if we can fund that, I think Jani will stay his last year. You can see his jump from last year to this year, especially with a three-point shot. I think if he can develop more of that game, some better ball handling skills, he could try to make a full roster in the NBA, which wouldn't put it past them. But what are you guys thinking on that front?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. The Janai one is obviously the big key, and I think obviously we don't know what he's thinking. If it's a pure bag decision, it's simply just making the highest bid. But you can make the pitch to him that if he comes back, he's got the potential to be one of the most decorated players in the history of Auburn basketball and have number four hanging from the rafters if we are capable of what we are next year. I think you look at the roster next year, you're starting five right now. I think it's projected, not guaranteed, that we're going to lose Aiden Holloway to the portal. Not sure how terrible of a thing that is, especially if we can replace him with a senior guard. But right now, I think your lineup is Trey Donaldson at the one, Denver at the two, Chad at the three, Chaney Johnson at the four, and maybe Janai at the five. And if not, certainly Dylan Carwell. Or do we go get a portal five? I got to say, that 2-3-4, I think those are all guys that can be all SEC players.
Oh, yeah. I think
as dangerous as, and especially now. Not only do they have the experience of an SEC season, but these guys are going to have a chip on their shoulder. And we saw them play in Nashville with a chip on their shoulder, and then they got real confident and slipped a little bit. Bruce is not going to let them forget this. And this is a, you know, listen, I hate to bring up Virginia, but you saw in 2019 what a team can do after a bad loss in March. When they come and have a full offseason with their chip on the shoulder, they can be a dangerous team. We saw glimpses of Chaney being a star.
Elite.
A star. And I think he can play a Jalen Williams-type role having games with 20 points. I mean, his shot, once Jalen went down against Kentucky's from on, his shot looked good, man. And, you know, Chad being a starter, Denver had moments where it felt like every time he shot the ball it was going in. So, questions to answer at the one and the five, and then the bench kind of can fill out. Obviously, we'll have McDonald's All-American Tahad Pettiford coming in, who is going to be an undersized two, but a guy who can quite literally jump out of the gym.
Yeah,
be an explosive scorer off the bench. It's basically a less psychopathic, better at basketball, Katie Johnson.
I don't see that as. I think your comparison is the two guard version of Jared Harper. But the way the way he bounces, he has way more bounce than KD. His shot, I mean, when Jerry came in, his shot.
No,
wasn't
I mean,
all
I mean, in terms of the rotation. This
year. Yeah, the rotation, but his player comp is definitely a Jared Harper-esque with a little bit more height and maybe not as good shooting. But what were you gonna say, Griggs?
I was gonna say earlier, like I thought it was kind of interesting today how Bruce put it. Like he was basically saying, "Janai, here are your options: come back to Auburn, you're gonna get a two-way, or you're going overseas."
Yeah, he's recruiting.
Yeah,
I mean that is true.
The day of college basketball or college athletics. You have to recruit your own roster just as much as you recruit everybody else.
I mean, I've not really seen him or anyone come out with like what the projection
he's got
is
time.
For him.
He's got
yeah,
time.
I think I've seen like 53, somewhere in the 50s. But like right now, if everyone who has eligibility still decides to stay, from what Bruce has offered right now in the portal, I think we definitely get a forward, whether that be a four or a five. I think they probably would want some interchangeability. Seeing that, I think if Janai stays, they might want to play him at the four some too, to have him and Dylan on the court at the same time. And then the biggest thing, which is why I think they're either telling Aiden that he's either the fifth guard or he's kicking the high road, they've looked at so many mid-major guards right now. And they're tall guards. They're not 5'11". They're not 5'10". They're like 6'3 plus. They're looking at tall. They looked at what happened this year at the end of the year. And what we didn't have, and that's point guards with size who couldn't drive in the lane, and they're addressing that wholeheartedly. And I mean, Bruce Lee last year with Johan and Chance got shafted by just freshmen not kind of leaving it out the dust, and he's getting ahead of it this year. I mean, the portal being open during March Madness is kind of questionable,
criminal,
and with us losing the first round, it's not the best thing. But on the bright side of that, you can go out and recruit the portal and get that team kind of locked up sooner rather than later. And I think that's clear as day, kind of what's happening. Because I think they would like to keep Trey because he's an older vet. I mean, it'll be a third year of playing quality basketball. I think they want to keep him to kind of keep some stability. But I think they're going to shoot from the moon for the point guard right now, and that should be pretty much every Auburn fan's biggest kind of target right now to look at and watch for. There's a couple of names right now, but it's too early to really kind of zone in on anybody. Hopefully by this time next week we kind of have a better idea. But I think if you can get a versatile, electric point guard on this team, and if everyone decides to return, there's no excuse to get to at least to the second weekend preseason.
Well, and I think, too, kind of an underrated factor is, you know, he's got to convince some potentially some guys in the portal to take smaller roles, but there's a ton of scholarships that are going to be open because Jalen's gone and KD is gone.
And
well, those
gone.
Two are being replaced by Tahad Pettiford and Jakai Howard, who's going to be the backup three next year.
I'm excited about Jakai. I'm more excited for Jakai Howard than
I am.
He's
going to be a great bench guy. But Lior Berman and Carter Sapera are in scholarship too.
They'll keep
and,
that.
And potentially Aiden Holloway. And I believe A.D. Scott's on scholarship.
Yeah, I think that Carter Sapera scholarship they'll keep open because they do that every year. And he'll probably give that to a walk-on.
But between Lior, Aiden, and potentially you can mess with A.D. Scott's, but those are two more guys out of the portal before Jani makes a decision, before Dylan Carwell potentially makes a decision. We don't know. I would assume Chris Moore is going to come back now that he's got his COVID year, but you never know.
I think right now, if everything sticks the way it is, we have one open scholarship the way Bruce operates. But you see how they're offering – I mean, they have to get a four. They can't not get a four, so I think the open spot right now is for a forward. But you see how they're offering so many portal point guards. At this point, it's a business. There's NIL involved. You got to play. It's a business. If you're one of your employees is making the rest of the team,
I mean,
their
they're not going to kick him off the team. But it sounds like in that meeting they basically discussed
they're going to limit his role, or
he's not going to be a starter, and he's going to
or he's going to have to significantly improve from last year to be able to keep the role he has.
I don't know how his role changes unless at a minimum he puts on 15 pounds of muscle, because in the SEC, I mean, Zakai Ziegler is undersized, but he's strong and is not afraid to take the ball to the rim and absorb contact. Aiden Holloway was scared to take contact at the rim and would duck out of the way and make open layups harder for himself.
He smoked two layups against Yale. That would have won us the game.
You can't be scared to take contact. Basketball is a physical game, even with the SEC refs calling fouls every other possession. And, you know, Trey is a big, strong guy who is not afraid to take contact.
I mean, that's what Wendell's able to do. He was able to get to the rim and draw fouls.
You can't be afraid. And at this point, you run Aiden Holloway off the three-point line, he's not a threat. He doesn't pull up and take mid-range jumpers. Super disappointing. And, you know, this has basically been a swing and a miss in the last three freshmen, all that were pretty highly rated.
So
Chance, Johan.
Chance was weird because he had the knee thing.
You can discuss how what the cause was. It was a miss. He played five games and he's not on the team anymore.
Injury, yeah.
It's a miss.
I'd say I'd
so.
Agree.
He's had much better success with guys out of the portal, like getting a Zepp Jasper type who comes in. He's got 2 years of eligibility as a point guard. Can slow the pace down.
No,
facilitator.
I don't think
that's not what he's looking for.
Oh no, you need. What they want and what they think could put them over the top is what they need to get. I mean, you can't get someone like a Mark Sears or Caleb Love or a RJ Davis from snapping your fingers, but you can get a guy similar or close to that and us have a dang good team next year. What they're going to get. That's what they're going to try to get, and that's what they probably should get,
in my opinion. We're going to see a lot more Denver at 1 minutes as well. I think we saw it glimpses this year, and he looked good.
I think they were able to put in more sets of him this year, later in the year, off ball with screens. You saw some of those actions in the tournament games coming in off screens.
But I just think they're going to try and if he is what he's hyped to be, and I just said they missed on the freshman, but Tahad Pettiford is going to be a guy that makes an impact off the bench and needs minutes. And whether it's a transfer point guard or Trey, if you want to run up the score and have guys on the court that are all five a threat to shoot, you have Denver and Tahad, with Denver running the one for glimpses at a time, even if it's one rotation, right? If it's one media timeout, 2-3 minutes a game, I just think you're going to see some combinations of that more, even just to switch things up, because I do think our rotations, especially towards the end of the year, just got a little bit stale.
I do like these. I mean, of course, like you can't forget the two freshmen that Bruce hit on 2 years ago was Jabari and Walker, who were both first-round draft picks. I do think that, like, yes, the Johan situation was a weird one. He was not originally with Auburn. Then the Will Wade stuff went down. And then that Chance, of course, you can point fingers, but yeah, that didn't work out well. And then right now, Aiden with that. But I think with these two, they've had so much experience, and they've been locked in on Auburn for like a long time. Like Tahad's been like an Auburn commit for probably over a year now.
Yeah, since last January.
You can't say like Aiden kind of went down to that like summer before
he committed in like July, like late July.
Yeah,
he committed.
But he came for a visit and he was already committed.
But still, I think these two is like a good like kind of combination of like
what we're kind of looking for.
I mean, if Aiden comes back, good. I still think he has a lot of potential. But with Tahad, especially with how Animate Bruce was on using him as the two guard next year. I think that's going to be a good fit, because especially with Denver and him alternating minutes, I think that'd be a great thing for him to learn, kind of like the style at Auburn.
I mean, he's taking K.A. Johnson's role.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And then
that's what I was saying earlier, is he's going to be a K.D. Johnson that doesn't come in and get identical fouls and is better at basketball, but play that kind of minute role.
Yeah.
But also, too, Aiden is a project, and we'll see what Tahad and Jakai turn into. But if you've had a donor coughing up seven figures to bring Jahni Broome back, it's not a project year. This is a year where you need to go hang at least one banner. You need to win one of the SEC, either regular season or tournament, and you need to make a run to the second weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's the bare minimum. And so if you have Aiden Holloway doing what he did this year, having games where he's 0 for 6, missing bunnies, jacking up crazy threes with hitting 20% of them, the Auburn family that has that kind of money is not going to be that patient. We saw what they did to Brian Harsin when they were coughing up NIL money, and he was throwing out duds on the field.
I don't know if they're coughing up NIL money for him, honestly.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to pay for a product on the floor, you don't want a freshman or a sophomore point guard not playing at the level required.
I mean, you want
a Zeke Mayo or one of these guys out of the portal that's dropping 18 a game.
If you're watching the tea leaves, I think you kind of see where it's going. And honestly, I think they have the coaches have the same sentiment as you do, and I think we as fans.
And with that, we're going to head to our next break. When we come back, it's time for the boardroom to talk a little bit about baseball. So do not go anywhere. Second half of the show is coming up. You're listening to the boardroom on Weagle 91.1 FM. And welcome back into the boardroom, everybody. You're hanging out with Griggs, Connor, and Nelson. The last two segments, we were talking about Auburn basketball, the loss to Yale, and what we can do to improve next season. And now it's time to transition to the diamond, as it is technically MLB opening day, but
it's opening
with the MLB's marketing genius of putting opening day ish as last week at 3 a.m. in Seoul, South Korea.
It is opening day, and thank God we're not talking about Auburn basketball anymore.
So true.
We can talk about happier thoughts.
Hey, like, let me say one thing before you go into it. Say one more thing.
Just mute my
mic.
To all of our
tens of listeners out there, the next 13 minutes is going to be the most insufferable segment of your entire life, talking about Connor's Yankees. So I think
we should start off with Mike Trout.
If you honor your sanity, you might want to plug your ears.
But yes, there was a prime Mike Trout moment today as the Orioles win 11-3 to take the run rule advantage in the AL East, the highest seed in the AL East right now.
If we are going to talk about
with
the
Orioles, Mike Trout hitting a home run and then losing 11-3.
If we are going to talk about the Orioles, Corbin Burns on the Orioles is going to be a problem.
Yeah, I was
6 innings, 1 hit given up. Was a home run. 1 hit, 1 run, 11 strikeouts.
Yeah, I was
going to be nasty.
Kind of live tweeting the updates that came in because I was looking at my ESPN app and I was like, whoa, I totally forgot Corbin Burns saw the O's. And then, a second later, gave up a home run to Mike Trout. I was like, I wonder how long this is going to last. It lasted all of one out because the Orioles immediately came back and scored 4 runs in 2 innings. And they won, 11-3?
Yeah, I saw a tweet that said Mike Trout was the only Angels starter with a hit.
Yeah, boy. Sometimes
that dude has to be the most just relaxed, greatest player in the sport. He doesn't care about winning. He doesn't really care about his team. He's I'm going to show up. I'm going to be, when healthy, the best player in baseball or one of the best players in baseball, and, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't make the playoffs with Ohtani and Mike Trout at the same time, it is malpractice of the highest order. It's unbelievable.
That's the only positive of Ohtani going to the Dodgers that we'll see him in the playoffs, but it's also for one of my least favorite teams in all sports.
Did you see their third inning today?
It's the Cardinals. The Cardinals are a retirement home.
Mookie Betts led the inning off. Solo home run. Ohtani had a great at-bat, works a walk. Next pitch, Freddie Freeman. 2-run home run. You're just like, oh my God. They're going to be so good.
Home.
That division is crazy.
Here's the thing, Nelson. If the Dodgers usually do their thing in Dodger, the Braves won't have to play them. However, you're probably going to have to face the Red
Phillies.
October again.
Yes, the Phillies, yes. Right now, I don't care how good Dodgers are. We've kind of had their number in the postseason the last couple of years. But the monkey off our back is the Phillies, and we got to get it off eventually. What a good way to start an opening day weekend.
With Good Friday playing at 3 o'clock.
In Philly, but yes, our only challenger is the fact that we were playing them on Good Friday. And Saturday is also, he was in the tomb then as well. So marking a Sunday win because our Lord has risen. But those first two games might get rough with Nick Castellanos. they might give us some trouble because he loves a good tragedy.
I will say the South Philadelphia Italians that are going to be taking off for Good Friday, that the bank will be playoff atmosphere tomorrow.
Yeah, but I will remind Phillies fans that are not listening one thing. You don't ask a man his salary, a woman her age, and a Phillies fan pitch a strider's overall ERA against them because save for one or two clips of him getting a home run off of him, he's been dominant. And that first game, that first playoff series, he was hurt. He did come off short rest and hurt and got shelled.
Speaking of dominance, Nelson. Should we talk about what Juan Soto did on the baseball field today?
I don't think
a one-run win counts as dominant.
I say Juan Soto won by one run? No, I didn't. So why don't you get off your phone and actually listen
to what
I'm
saying? I'm looking up the stats for the game today,
Connor, Juan Soto.
Because Kyle's here and you're supposed to be Kyle.
His first at-bat, he had two walks. He had an RBI single that kicked off a rally. And in the ninth inning, with one out, the Astros had a runner on first and second. This was looking like a prime Clay Holmes implosion and a vintage Astros owning the Yankees the last 8 years. Kyle Tucker hits a base hit to the outfield, and Juan Soto from right field throws an absolute missile to home plate. Platinum Glove Award winner Jose Trevino tags out the potential tying run, and then Clay Holmes shut the game out. Down 4-0, Nestor Cortez looked like he was throwing batting practice for two innings. The Yankees looked awesome after that. After that second inning, we left 10 guys on base, still scored 5 runs and 1. Anthony Volpe drew 3 walks. The high leg kick is gone. Judge actually didn't look that great. Stan didn't look that great. But the rest of the order, including Oswaldo Cabrera, looked pretty darn good. I was cautiously not optimistic. Like, I was like, this Yankee season might be a little struggle. After one game, they've got me.
The y'all's lineup is good.
The problem is you guys got to face the Orioles.
Here's the thing. The Orioles are good. That feels like a different vibe from the team. And Juan Soto and Verdugo, mainly Soto, there was a different energy. Last year, it felt like, Kyle's not here with our stats guy. If we went down by 3-4 runs, game was over. They just pouted. They had no fight. They had no energy. To see the fight and to see them claw back, even with Verdugo grounding into a double play with the bases loaded, they clawed back and found a way to win a game they should have lost. It makes me super optimistic that finally the tide has changed a little bit in that locker room. And there's not a ton of strikeout hitters. Verdugo's a contact guy. Volpe's a contact guy. We'll see Austin Wells probably tomorrow catch Rodon. Instead of Trevino, who is another young, exciting guy. It's going to be the rotation and the health, but
yeah, that's
think this Yankees team can give the Orioles a run for their money, which is crazy to say that, like, I think we can. But the Orioles are probably the best team in the American League.
I'm going to say this from just a baseball perspective, not a I don't like the Yankees thing, but yeah, the Yankees, I'd probably say, are the second-best team in that division. Your main thing is in this 60, like, however long Gerrit Cole's out, how long can you, like, keep this up? Because you said it today, because Nestor did not look good. If you're relying on Rodon and a lot of bullpen innings, then that's going to take a lot of wear and tear, especially on a team that's had a lot of injury pros. But, I mean, the Orioles are just stinking good, man. I mean, look at the Orioles. Like, especially, they haven't even called Jackson Holliday up yet. Henderson, Jackson Holliday.
Honestly, like, even if we get in as a wild card team, even if the Yankees get in as a wild card team, it'll be what it's going to be. I think this is a year where, coming off an 82-80 season, not making the playoffs in New York, that season is just not acceptable. And you have 1 year guaranteed of Juan Soto. This is the 1 year to, A, prove to him that we're worthy of signing a long-term contract, but also, if he leaves, make that 1 year worth it. And so I think Cashman, come July, is going to be super aggressive at the deadline.
Or he's going to be out of a job in
October. Or he's going to be out of a job in October if we lose, and he knows that pressure. This is a do-or-die year for him and Aaron Boone. And so I think if we can, to your point, Griggs, just kind of get over the boulder of until Cole comes back, I think we're going to pick up another starter. I think we'll pick up another bullpen piece. And the underrated acquisition of the day, right before the season started, was Yankees picking up John Birdie for the Marlins, who's a 290 hitter as an infield kind of utility piece, that when DJ comes back, he can be the old DJ LeMahieu, bounce around the infield, come in for pinch hitting, which this team was going to be really struggling for depth off the bench, and I think that fixes that. So that was a good move from Cashman, but you're paying Rodon a lot of money, you're paying Stroman a lot of money on a short-term deal, and you're paying Cole a lot of money. Those guys need to be a dominant 1-2-3, And what we get from Schmidt and Cortez and Clayton Beater, we'll figure out from there.
Kind of bouncing off that, I mean, me and Griggs both have our teams. So in the short time we have, we will kind of fizzle off our off season and kind of what we look forward to.
But your team is really, really good.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk a lot.
Until October starts.
I'm not going to talk a bunch. I mean, at least we got to know
you
what it's like.
You can't talk about
year.
October in the last 15 years. Please, let Nelson and me talk about October.
Let us talk about our teams. Connor, we'll let you talk about the Yankees
for 5 minutes.
You're going to criticize the Yankees in October?
So, talking over Connor right now, I'm talking about my team. We didn't really do much. Got Renato Lopez to be our fifth guy in the rotation.
Chris Sale.
Yeah, Chris Sale.
Nelson,
I'm hyping you up right now.
Chris Sale's going to be good for, like, maybe 15 starts this year. I mean, it's going to be good. Better than what we've had in the last couple of years. We've had a lot of injuries in the starting rotation. I want to go on a quick, like, one-minute soapbox real quick. Looking at our acquisition to get what's his name? The guy from the Mariners we got?
Kelenic?
Yeah, Jared Kelenic. Looking at a swing from last year to this year, it amazes me how bad MLB hitting coaches are. Because in one spring training, Kevin Seitzer changed his swing so much. He had so much jerking motion from his hands going up to down and up again. Straight. I'm talking baseball here. Get your mind out of the gutter.
He's getting muted right now. He's
so true.
He's
so true. Getting in like 15 practices, getting improving his swing so that his hand goes directly to the ball and actually getting solid contact now. It's kind of crazy how he was in the Mariners organization for like 5 years and he had never told him to do that, or he'd never attempted.
You got to remember where he's from originally.
I had no idea.
The New York Mets.
Well,
storied franchise.
Come on, let's be real. No one from the Mets.
But I mean, anything besides a first place in the NL East is probably a failure for this team. Gotta get the monkey off our back.
I mean, y'all are definitely a playoff team.
This is a 100-win team.
We gotta get the monkey off our back with the first round, but I think after 2 years of sadness, we'll finally get that.
I think the main thing for y'all is just kind of, again, just having that kind of just consistent bullpen.
Oh, our bullpen probably might be without injuries. It's probably
I'm not worried about the bullpen.
I don't think this team necessarily.
I've talked about in the past. It has a little bit of trouble.
Has a weakness day one. Now that starting rotation, the back end, if it doesn't perform, there might be a revolving door in AAA this year. And last year, no guy stuck. We kind of tried to throw pan against the wall and see what stuck, and nothing did. Hopefully this year that'll be different.
I think the Braves' concern mainly in October, and it's a lot of teams, is kind of the 6 through 9, 7 through 9 in the order. Those were automatic outs in the Philly series. Their big players were fine. But the guys at the bottom of the order just couldn't get on base and flip the order around. Arcia got called at the wrong time. So I would sadly trust in Alex Anthopoulos that if that pertains to be an issue through the start of the season, he's going to go out and trade his number 30 ranked prospect for probably Francisco Lindor.
We got ammo. Our AAA start rotation is full of guys who have pitched multiple innings in the big leagues.
They'll pull guys up who can stick, and the guys that don't stick are going to get traded for.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Now my 2 minute soapbox of the Cubs.
Go ahead.
NL Central is not great. I mean, here's the thing: the other two divisions in the NL, the West and the East, are just so top heavy. Like, we don't have like a well. Like, all around, like, it's not been the case for baseball in the last couple years. I mean, you could make the case for the NL in the NL East and the AL East a little bit, but I think the Cubs can do this in the Central. I think they can win the Central. It's just a matter of, can the bullpen be good, especially with kind of the injuries they've had in the past. I mean, getting Bellinger back on that deal is an incredible move by Jed Hoyer, and I think with Craig Counsell coming in, one of the most underrated managers, I think, in baseball these past 10, 15 years with what he did in the Brewers with that little time.
What a snake. Going from the Brewers to the Cubs.
All about that money, man. But I do think just kind of keeping the consistency of the bats. I mean, I think our infield's pretty good, pretty sound. I really want to see what we kind of come out with in the bullpen, because that's a little bit of a concern. Last year, we do have some younger guys in there. I know Luke Little's back, who came in last year. It was pretty impressive in September. And then just... yeah, just making some moves, maybe the trade deadline if things are looking well. Because last year we was in that span where were we going to make a move? Were we not going to make a move for anything? Were we going to trade anyone?
Yeah, last year it was, are you buyers or sellers?
Ending up winning two games right before the deadline. It's like, okay, we can do this. We didn't really buy anyone at the deadline. So now I'm really just interested to see that. And we have Albert Azalea back, I mean, as a great closer for us. And yeah, again, it's going to just come down to consistent hitting and if how long our starts can go. Because I still think Justin Steele is probably the most underrated pitcher in the National League.
Yeah, he was very good. He was great for y'all last year.
I think to wrap up our baseball talk, the story of the offseason heading into the Major League opening day, this opening weekend, Scott Boras got cooked.
Good. This seems to happen in all professional sports. This seems to happen to Scott Boras, Drew Rosenhaus. That we need to get these guys.
He was looking for 7 for 290 for Blake Snell.
You wanted
Snell, Montgomery, Chapman, and who's the other one?
Bellinger.
Under 290 combined.
Get the Indeed, buddy.
Combined.
I think you wanted 200 for Bellinger.
I think the league combined. Yeah.
He got cooked.
To say we don't like what you do, and we're going to.
Good for those GMs.
Good. Yeah.
All right, we're going to head to our last break. When we come back, we have our picks for the weekend after that pretentious baseball segment for a little bit at the start there. But nonetheless, when we come back, final segment of the show, don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Boardroom on Weagle 91.1 FM. And welcome back into The Boardroom, everybody. You're hanging out with Nelson, Connor, and Griggs. Last time we talked about baseball and the MLB opening day today. And now we transition to everyone's favorite segment of the show, our picks and previews. So Kyle is not here. He's the normal guy who does this. So Connor,
well,
taking the lead today.
Kyle did not send a score update from last week, but that's because we picked long-term March Madness stuff. We have still left that up in the air. Kyle's picks for this week are basically a second chance bracket from last week. So we're going to repick the Final Four teams for 1 point each instead of two, and then we're going to pick a national champion.
National champion.
We're going to pick a national champion for 3 points. Let's start in the East region. Currently, UConn is up 9 points over the San Diego State Aztecs at halftime. Kyle has taken the UConn Huskies. I doubted Iowa State. I'm tempted. They looked pretty good, but I'm going to ride with UConn.
Yeah, UConn, the Huskies. Although, I think Illinois might upset Iowa State. Was it tomorrow?
But it's tonight at 9:09
p.m. Tonight, but I think UConn will beat both of these teams. Maybe not as convincingly as we think, but that team is deep. I got the Huskies.
This one's a tough one. Because I want to make it boredom unanimous, but at the same time, like, I know I'm probably down. I need to get some points back.
Oh, be very careful. On your pick could stand.
Do it. Be cool.
Your pick could
be
stand
cool.
for supporting certain athletes.
That is true.
Ayudasumu. Brad Underwood. I know he does not play there. I'm going to go with Illinois.
Good.
Wow.
Is
that the business you want to stand on?
Say what you want right now.
Stand on business.
Okay. Everything aside the basketball. We're talking basketball only. We're talking ball. Terrence Shannon right now has been incredible for the Lions. He scored 58 points in two games. I'm just talking basketball right now.
Move on.
That's fine. If that's what you stand for, that's totally fine.
What's you Domingo Gourmand doing?
what'd you say?
Just keep going.
Keep going.
We'll move down the bracket to the West, the region of drama. Currently, Clemson leads Arizona by 4 with 10 minutes to go. Kyle has taken the Arizona Wildcats. I am going to ride with the Tar Heels of North Carolina. It's chalky. I need them to beat Alabama tonight. I just need them to beat Alabama tonight. So I'm going to send all my good vibes to Hubie and the boys and take the Tar Heels.
Everything about my body wants to pick Bama just to jinx them.
Do it.
And that's what I'm going to do, baby. I don't care about winning this. Send those vibes.
Nelson, don't give a piss about nothing but the Tide.
Give me the Tide.
Griggsy.
Give me the Heels. Maybe treason if I didn't.
Go Heels. We move back to the top right, to the South region. Those regional games will be played tomorrow night. We have Houston versus the disgusting Duke Blue Devils. And NC State Marquette, kind of the last tournament hero, DJ Burns. I believe NC State's the only double-digit seed to make the Sweet 16.
That's correct.
Kyle has taken Houston. I am also going to take Houston. It's 3-1 seeds, but this has been a super chalky tournament, and Duke is not beating Houston. I refuse to even acknowledge that. Jared McCain's too busy making TikToks. Kelvin Sampson, malpractice to not foul by up 3 at the end of that last game against A&M. I think they got their scare out of the way. I expect them to have two.
Well, I don't know if that was a scare, but like A&M, I picked them a couple of my brackets.
They're good.
They looked really good in that game.
No, honestly, the way they came back.
Honestly, if they made free throws, would have won that game by like 10 points. Yeah, I got my four seed out of the way so I can take Houston. But like every year, like one team, I mean, they don't expect makes like at least like the Elite Eight. Give it my boy DJ Burns. That's a unit out. That's a left tackle playing center. It's whenever he hits that baby hook, a tear, an angel gets its wings. I cried tears of joy watching them play basketball. I think they could beat Marquette, but they won't be able to beat Houston.
Give me Marquette. I think with the combination they have right now, they've already had their scare already in the tournament. I think that NC State, I think the fatigue is going to catch up to them. What is it now, like 8 games in 15, 16 days?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing a ton of basketball, but they're playing at a high level.
I mean, they are, but like they've not really, like besides North Carolina, when North Carolina came in, this is like the quote-unquote worst one seed. I think they – Marquette can do this.
Houston's the worst one seed?
No. I said North Carolina because NC State beat them. But I'm going to go with Marquette here with Tyler Riedebuch Kolek, I think.
All right, we move to the Midwest region down there. Kyle has taken the Creighton Blue Jays. These games are also tomorrow night. Gonzaga, Purdue, and Creighton, Tennessee. I pick Creighton in my bracket, and I still think Creighton is going to make the Final Four. I think Creighton, this is in preview. I'm going to take Creighton to win the national championship.
At that table in Chili's, I said to prior guest speaker on the boardroom, Matthew, that they're my pick.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna hashtag stand on business because I think Mark Few pulls his upset because they looked good. They upset Purdue.
I agree.
But then they lose to Creighton.
I agree.
In the Elite Eight, Rick Barnes pulls the Barnes. It's going to happen, and Mark Few's going to pull a Mark Few. I mean, besides Greg McDermott.
I don't think that's what pulling a Mark Few means.
I digress. All those coaches, I mean, Matt Painter, Mark Few, Greg McDermott, and
these are chokers.
And Rick Barnes. One of them's going to come out on top, and I think Creighton has the best all-around team. So, give me the Blue Jays.
I'm going to be the villain.
Good.
They've just looked so dominant in this tournament so far. And this is the bracket. This is the makeup, especially if Creighton wins, where they can finally get over the hump. Give me the Purdue Boilermakers.
Yeah, but here's my thing. Like,
because this is not a good Gonzaga team still. That Kansas team was depleted to the max, and they just had given up.
Gonzaga's just good in March.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is true, but still.
They're going to – I mean, Purdue's guards have played well so far, but – when there's a game that they can't play and you get a guy.
I think Gonzaga's going to win tomorrow night.
You get a guy like, what's that, Cockbrenner? What's his?
Well, he's on Creighton.
Or Creighton.
Brian Cockbrenner.
Yeah, Creighton's guy. You get a guy that can somewhat go size for size with Zach Heady, and you got guys like Creighton who can run up and down the floor and run past those guards for Purdue and make those guards make tough plays, and more than likely than not, they're not going to be able to. And give Purdue one game with a fair whistle and they're losing by 20.
All right, I mean, we're pressed for time here, so I'm going to cut you off.
They need a fair whistle on
Sunday. We are pressed
for
time here. Kyle has picked Houston as his national champion. Like I said, I'm going to take Creighton. I think they're not an overly deep team, but as we mentioned in the boardroom like a month ago, teams with more than 8 guys in the rotation just don't win national championships. They're a team that really plays 7, and they have a Virginia transfer who comes off in emergency situations. But Trey Alexander, Baylor Scheiman, Ryan Kalkbrenner is as good as a big 3 as there is in college basketball. And Steven Ashworth is a guy that will just hit a big shot when you need him to. So it's an out there pick, but give me the Blue Jays.
I'm going to divert from my previous statement about the Blue Jays because I want to be different than Connor and be different than what I was going to originally do and pick UConn. I'm going to go with another one seed and go with the Cougars of Houston, H-Town. They got some dogs, and I think Samson gets over the hump in a big way.
Nelson, once again, electing to go for a Cougar. Griggs.
This has been a crazy episode. It's going to be an Illinois-North Carolina Final Four. I think whoever
that
wins...
That would be a semifinal.
Which is why it's called the Final Four. Well, and I think whoever wins... that's in part of my pick, Connor, please. And I think... I want to say Illinois, but I think it's going to be North Carolina.
All right, so we've got Kyle and Nelson on Houston. I'm on Creighton. UNC is the selection for Griggs. No one taking the UConn Huskies. I think we all wanted to be a little bit different. I think if we were all being super honest, we would take
UConn. They're the best team in the tournament, but it's super hard to go back-to-back.
I will say that Phoenix, if they get there, will be the first time UConn has had to be on a plane since conference play.
That's crazy.
So, Right. We shall see. We probably will be picking the Final Four games again next week.
We probably will. And with that, that's going to do it for our show. Missed any of today's show, check it out on your favorite podcast platform later on. But until next week, for Kyle Davis, who is not here, but we wish he was, for Nelson Early, Connor Greenberg, I'm Greg Splankenberg. This has been The Boardroom on Weagle 91.1 FM. We thank you for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend, and War Eagle.
Thank you for joining us for this session of The Boardroom on Weagle 91.1 FM. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back to the show on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next week, and this meeting of The Boardroom is officially adjourned.